The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
I want to remind the public that Donald Trump and House Republicans also have their own ideas for the border. So let's review the majority's border ideas that they've actually presented. Here they are. Donald Trump actually has said that he wants to build alligator moats along the border. That's one of his incredible ideas.
So let's put up the stats for this alligator Alcatraz. It's going to have 3,000 beds, aims to detain, process, and deport illegal migrants. One-stop shopping, as the governor put it, plans to fly migrants out directly from the facility, which
people are thinking, okay, you're in the middle of the Everglades. It's hot. That would explain why you've got this bank of air conditioners here.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is going to be illegals will come in. They'll be processed. There'll be places for them to be housed. You'll have an ability for food. You'll have an ability for them to consult legal rights if they have that, because there is a process that's involved with this. So this is really everything. This is going to be a self-contained little area. And then, of course, you also have stuff for the staff that work here. So we've got laundry facilities. We've got showers. We've got there's not going to be anything that they're hurting for anything. There'll be AC. There'll be things that everybody needs. There's medical here. So it's being done right. It's being done by the book. It also takes this deportation mission out of the hair of our local and state law enforcement. This has no impact on Florida residents, because some of that stuff can have an impact on them if it's in more populated areas. And so logistically, this really answers the call.
They got this up and running in 8 days. It'll have 3,000 beds. As you mentioned, this could be a blueprint for what we have around the country. So major kudos to President Trump.
Living in a tent in Iraq, oftentimes with no AC in the middle of summer. Nobody complained about that being inhumane for me when I was serving the country, but it's bad for illegals?
No, it's just ridiculous. All he says, the highest detention standards in the industry. And this facility is going to give exactly what the left's been screaming about, due process, due process, due process. Guess where due process happens? At this facility, because there's going to be immigration judges there to hear their case and take their pleas. And this is going to be their last stop. When they leave here, they'll be on a deportation plane to their homeland.
There's nothing about this facility, about this detention camp, that is not cruel and inhumane. The fact that we're going to have 3,000 people detained in tents in the Everglades in the middle of the hot Florida summer during hurricane season, right? I mean, this is a bad idea all around that needs to be opposed and stopped.
But Ron DeSantis is still governor of Florida. He took the comfy couch hosts on a tour of the concentration camp that he's building in Florida in order to round up people, brown people, and throw them in a camp.
It's disgusting. What's happening in the Everglades isn't immigration enforcement. It's absolute political theater.
Is this the Republican Party laying a trap for Democrats so that they can paint them as the open border party?
But I'll say this, when it comes to the wildlife, I'm more concerned for the wildlife than the folks on the site. You know, the idea that these are vicious animals out to attack people is rather absurd. And I think it detracts from the important message, which is that this doesn't belong here. Floridians don't want it here. And it's wasteful and an incredible risk to our ecological resources.
The Florida Republican Party is selling all kinds of alligator Alcatraz merchandise. There you see some of the T-shirts. They've got hats.
You're actually surrounded by gators and pythons.
So this is as secure as it gets. I mean, if a criminal alien were to escape from here somehow, and I don't think they will, you've got nowhere to go. I mean, what are you going to do? Trudge through the swamp and dodge alligators on the way back?
But alligators, but we're going to teach them how to run away from an alligator, okay? If they escape prison, how to run away. Don't run in a straight line. Run like this. And you know what? Your chances go up about 1%.
Alligator Alcatraz. That's the hot topic in the American news cycle at the moment. It's almost overwhelming, the sheer stupidity at times of the news cycle. I mean, when you think about all the things we've been discussing on this program, what's coming? When you think about the explosion of violence, soon to come on this world, not just America. The whole world's going to be drawn into it. And yet so many commentators, so many politicians, so many of the world leaders, they just have their heads firmly buried in the sand. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show from Ed Stone. This is our last show from Ed Stone, as we'll have a sub standing in on tomorrow's program from Edmund. And we'll make our way. I don't think I've been talking about this much. It was up in the air, actually, for a time. But we'll be making our way on Friday to Jerusalem. So we'll hopefully be there for about a week. And we're lining up some segments, special segments to do over in Israel, following on all of the drama from the Celtic Throne tour. And then, of course, the so-called 12-day war. And speaking of Celtic Throne, of course, we've got the final showing for this summer's tour. That's tomorrow night in London. And if we have time later today, we've got about 5 minutes of wonderful feedback yet again, this time from Darby, the show that we had just last evening. So you think about I think it was Sam this morning who was saying, you know, we're going to be arguing about Medicaid and food stamps for illegal aliens, even as the prophesied beast power obliterates the nations of Israel and Judah. You look at the prophecies. Now, again, it's not that there isn't time for any lighter stories or maybe a story that's kind of funny from time to time. We like to inject a little bit of humor into this program at times. But think about how sobering so many of these end-time prophecies are. You're talking about a concentration camp in the Everglades or the swamp of Florida when actual concentration camps are coming. The big debate is it humane? Is it inhumane? I mean, these people will defend illegals. They'll fight for them tooth and nail and yet ignore the victims of some of these illegal alien criminals that have raped and murdered thousands. And so, as I say, they're filling up the 24-hour news cycle with another story that really is not significant at all. I guess as if there is one positive, these radical left-wing attorneys, they're going to have to actually venture into a literal swamp full of snakes and alligators to represent their favored clients, illegal aliens, people that broke into the country, so to speak. And now President Trump, to his credit, I mean, he's trying to slow this down, the onslaught, the attack, the invasion. That's what it was under the supervision of the dear leader, Barack Obama. Term one, term two. He, of course, was in charge during the fake presidency. He's the auto pen, basically. I know President Trump likes to repeat that. Who was doing it? Well, you know who was doing it. You know who was signing the documents in that sense. You know who was in charge. Obama himself. He said the quiet part out loud as Joe Biden was coming in. Yeah, I'd sure love to run the show from the basement. And that's what he did. And now he's been silenced. So many prophecies are being fulfilled, and there's many more to come. And as I say, so many of them, they're quite sobering, and we need to be thinking about what's about to come on our nations. There's for all of the good in the Jeroboam administration, clearing out illegals being one of them, or at least trying to. It doesn't seem like it's possible to get rid of all of them. But for all the good, there's also some pretty big blind spots, as we've seen with, you know, bringing peace to the Middle East. There's a pretty big blind spot in the Trump administration with respect to the threat that's eventually going to come out of the heart of Europe. This is something that Herbert Armstrong talked about for 50 plus years. In many ways, this was his signature prophecy. And we have a lot to say about that in our brochure, our free booklet, He Was Right. Here, though, is a clip from Mr. Armstrong from decades ago, clip 9.
And some of us, my friends, know not only what we see when we're over there, but we know also what is prophesied. And we know what is prophesied to rise up in Europe. And we know which is the one and the only nation in Europe that is capable of dominating, and which is the economic and the industrial heart of all Europe, without which there could be no stability and strength. A human body cannot live without its heart. And the economic and the military body that is to rise up and to restore the Roman Empire, the thing that we least suspect here in the United States, it cannot rise up without its heart. And its heart is in Germany.
Its heart is in Germany. The thing we least suspect, as you heard him say there. Surely it'll never happen like it did in World War II or the lead up to it. Or before World War I. Surely history couldn't repeat itself. Surely there couldn't be an unstoppable force to emerge from the heart of Europe. You're beginning to see movement. You see Germany now talking about, I've got a clip from Merz that we didn't have time to play last week, where he says, hey, yeah, we're rebuilding. We're rebuilding, and we're not doing it just to satisfy President Trump. We're doing this to become a power. A world power. And so they're upping, and President Trump is encouraging this. You know, not 2% spending on defense, but 5%. And Germany now is finally on board with that. And they're leading the way, just as Herbert Armstrong prophesied for decades. This, as I say, this was his signature prophecy. In so many ways, the prophesied emergence of a Jeroboam administration is accelerating these other prophecies. The dominoes are falling everywhere. President Trump, as I said yesterday, I said it, I think, on Monday's show as well. I mean, you look at him with the Supreme Court victory from last week, Friday, and he's amassing more power. And again, the Bible describes him as having king-like authority and power, and he's using it for quite a lot of good things. And as I say, though, there's some blind spots. There's going to be some mistakes made. I read that quote to you yesterday from Mr. Armstrong where he said, you know, our problem is that we're overconfident. We put too much trust in ourselves, in our might, our wealth. We put too much trust in ourselves because of maybe past successes. But look, there's been quite a few failures in the last 50 or 60 years. And we're about to receive a wake-up call. And so is Britain. And so is little Judah in the Middle East. And that call is going to be brutal. But right now, you're seeing a show of strength from the Jeroboam administration. You're seeing some power. You're seeing him rattle off, in the words of his MAGA supporters, one victory after another. This is, I forget which channel this came from, but play clip 2.
Both Republicans and Democrats are facing the cold, hard truth that Trump might be unstoppable. Whether you like him or whether you don't like him, you need to look realistically at what he's doing and how quickly he's doing it. The Trump archives are a series of near impossible feats that we have been told. The Israelis have agreed to a ceasefire deal in Gaza that would bring home the hostages. Hamas has not agreed. Like all Mideast peace deals, it's fragile. But there is progress. Here at home, just today, the University of Pennsylvania announced something that they said they never would. A change to its policy on trans athletes. Men will no longer be allowed to play on women's sports teams. It seems obvious, right? But a couple of years ago, if you said that, you were a bigot. Penn, of course, is where the biological male, Leah Thomas, made a mockery of swimming records. That is no more. The border is closed. We were told that it couldn't be done by Joe Biden without congressional action. Trump did it. The big, beautiful bill just passed the Senate. Trump's more politically powerful than ever, even more powerful than when we told you yesterday that he's the most powerful modern president. Again, this is not cheerleading. This is telling you what is happening.
More powerful than ever. And there's a lot of truth to that statement. And we were telling you this along the way. when we had those articles from several years ago about how eventually the Supreme Court was going to come around and favor Donald Trump. And that's what we saw last week, just Friday. He's going forward. They're rattling off the victories as they see them. The big, beautiful bill. It's actually a big, beautiful load of deficit spending, debt, crushing debt, nation-destroying debt. We had a morning brief go out today. The death of spending cuts. They just don't exist. They can't do it in Washington. They can't do it in London. Look at what we're doing to ourselves. Die by suicide, as Lincoln once said. In the morning brief, it says here, America and Britain are overspending themselves into extinction and are utterly incapable of reining in the problem. We're overspending ourselves to extinction. Donald Trump's big, beautiful bill squeaked through the Senate. Well, it was a 50-50 tie. It shows you just how divided the country is. J.D. Vance had to come in as the deciding vote. But listen to this. It went through the Senate, so they did some tweaking on this 1,000-page bill. 1,000 pages, almost. And the Senate, they added $3.3 trillion in deficit spending compared to the $2.4 trillion the House approved. So it goes on to the Senate. I mean, and these are the ones that fancy themselves as the real legislators. I mean, they get down to business. This is just two per state. Only 100 in the body. And they added more deficit spending. They can't help themselves. They can't slow it down. They cannot make a cut anywhere. You can talk about Doge. You can be best friends with Elon Musk for a few months. But in the end, what happens? Nothing. No trimming. No cutting back. I mean, Mr. Armstrong had those articles before he died in the 1980s saying, you know, we better prepare to tighten our financial belt to make a few spending cuts. I mean, that's reality for someone that doesn't want to go bankrupt, you know, in the private sector. But boy, government, legislators, presidents, prime ministers in the nations of Israel, we are spending ourselves into oblivion. We're utterly incapable of even reining it in. A few dollars. It's impossible. Now it goes back to the House. And let's see, maybe the House will add a little bit more in the way of deficit spending. Who knows? They add $3.3 trillion to deficit spending. This is like was brought out in the morning brief. This is all part of our moral collapse. We are collapsing from within, and we're consumed by non-stories, as I played there in the cold open. Even as the world is burning, you know, talking to ourselves about how it's mostly peaceful. Israel, Donald Trump's working another 60-day ceasefire with Israel and the Hamas terrorist group. Peace in our time. In fact, it's throwing a lifeline to Hamas, to the mullahs. Even when Israel had them on the ropes. You got to look a little bit longer term than what might be the condition or the activity next week. Proverbs 29 says, without vision, the people perish. So the Senate, they worked all night. Don't you know? They're hard workers. Oh, yes. They were up straight through the night, coming up with ways to spend trillions more. I'll get to that in just a second. But what are we doing to ourselves? In that morning brief, speaking of the UK, Joel Hilliker talked about Britain's culture of death. The UK's embrace of euthanasia and late-term abortion reflect a moral collapse, a direct result of rejecting the sanctity of human life revealed in the Bible. Euthanasia, late-term abortion, happening right here in Israel. What does that say about our morality? It says, in Britain, nearly a quarter of working-age people are on welfare. That's one of the big sources of contention in this bill this ugly bill? What are we going to do with Medicaid? And what if we lose some of, what if people lose their Medicaid privileges? We've got to expand and grow all of these social programs. We're a nanny state now. A quarter of working age people in Britain are on welfare. That's nation destroying. That's a nation destroying statistic right there. More than half of households receive more in benefits than they pay in taxes. It's the same in the United States, virtually. Last Friday, Richard Palmer told you about the country's struggle to curtail even ridiculous abuses of disability benefits. 1 in 10 working age Britons are on disability. So we're sick, we're crippled, we're homeless in some cases. We're not working, even when you're working age. This is a sickness. This is a disease. This is exactly as Isaiah 1 describes it. As I told you on yesterday's show, I mean, even the curses that are setting in are proof. They're proof of who we are in prophecy. They're proof that we're the end time nations of Israel and that the little Israel in the Middle East is actually Judah. Jew is just a nickname for Judah. They almost named the state of Israel Judah in 1948. That was one of the, I think, the final three choices. And yet people are deceived. They have no idea who the United States or Britain are in prophecy. They have no clue. Israel lost its identity, as Mr. Armstrong explained, in the U.S. and Britain in prophecy. And we were taken off into captivity, into Assyria. Judah went into Babylon. The Bible speaks of the two as two distinct nations. You had the nation of Judah and you had the nation to the north of Israel. Who are the lost tribes of Israel? You need to know. If you're going to understand Bible prophecy, if you're going to understand the Bible, that's the master key to unlocking our understanding of Bible prophecy. The United States and Britain in prophecy. Who are we? What is our identity? I've got a lot more on that way, 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 way back in my notes. So I'll have to come back to it maybe on Friday's show from Jerusalem or perhaps next week. President Trump, though, for his part, just to come back to this very ugly bill, a reporter asked him, you know, just barely made it through the Senate. And there's quite a few conservative fiscal hawks, as they call them, in the House that may not be on board with it, but according to President Trump, he feels like it'll be easier to move it through the House. He's probably right. We'll see. This is clip 6.
Well, I just heard that about the Senate, and the bill just passed, and it tells you there's something for everyone. I mean, it's a great bill. There is something for everyone, and I think it's going to go very nicely in the House. Actually, I think it will be easier in the House than it was in the Senate.
There's a little something for everyone in this. And he's right about that. I mean, it passes through one chamber, it goes to another, and they spend more. That's just the way it works. You want to talk about an alligator swamp? Forget about the one in the Everglades. I mean, this is just how it operates in the DC swamp. Every man for himself. I'll take you through an article from Politico here in just a second, which it's just disgusting. It gives us an insight into how the system works in Congress. This is from the Morning Brief. Americans have as close to a consensus about the federal government needing to reduce spending as about on anything. But what to cut? Here the consensus evaporates. See, everybody acknowledges that we've got to cut spending. And then they start arguing. Well, you can't cut what I get for my state, for my district, for my constituents. In fact, you've got to give us more. If you're going to get my vote, you've got to give us more. That's the way it works. Deals. You got to make a deal. You got to pay for someone's vote. You got to pay them off. You got to spend more. There's something for everyone. President Trump said it. Mike Johnson said it. Play the clip of Mike Johnson. That's, I think, number...
And I tell you what, everybody is going to benefit from this bill. Sean, as you noted, all those features. It's the most conservative piece of legislation we've ever worked on.
The most conservative piece of legislation ever that he's ever worked on. And everyone's going to benefit, except for your children. But forget about that. Except for the United States of America. The proverb says, as I read yesterday, the borrower is a servant to the lender. We can't keep borrowing our way to a utopia. We're killing ourselves. Everyone benefits from, and of course, by benefit, they mean everyone gets a handout. Everyone's paid with this fake money, this monopoly money. It says here, now the bill must pass the House. Mike Johnson said he's not happy with what the Senate did to our product. He's not happy, but look, he's got to change his tune now, because now it's in his chamber. And so he's got to be like Ron Johnson and flip-flop. Everybody is capable of being bought. That's the way that the alligator swamp works in D.C. Politico says this, the Alaska Republican Lisa Murkowski, known for her independent streak, remained unhappy with her party's signature legislation. She spent hours in scores of conversations in public, on the Senate floor and behind closed doors, trying to persuade fellow Republicans to make changes to the massive package. To make changes? So she wasn't going to vote, not because she knows this is a monstrosity. She wanted to get more for her home state, Alaska. She'd warned for weeks that the GOP tax and domestic policy mega bill would cause too much pain for her home state's most vulnerable citizens. And so it explains here how that John Thune, he was considering trying to go after Rand Paul's vote. He's been an outspoken critic of this legislation. And instead, they set their sights on Murkowski to try to get that 50th vote. You got to get 50, and then J.D. Vance can tip the scales. It says Murkowski's vote was at risk of being out of reach, especially after Senate parliamentarian ruled that multiple sweetener provisions to boost Medicaid payments to Alaska and Hawaii violated Senate rules that limit what can pass through the reconciliation process with a simple majority. So they were trying to break the rules. Murkowski says, hey, you gotta put in some extra perks for Alaska. We need some pork barrel spending added to this monstrosity. And then I'll be happy. And then I'll vote for this beautiful bill. I'll go out in front of the cameras and I'll call it beautiful. That's no problem. Says Murkowski, at times wrapped in a blanket or carrying around legislative text and pen to her colleagues, was able to extract key concessions for her state as she huddled on the floor with leadership. She won victories on clean energy tax credits, delaying changes to food aid for her state, and the promise of massive revenues from oil and gas drilling leases, among other priorities she can take back home. It says here, but this was not one of Murkowski's moments to bury her or to buck her party. Even as she held out to get extra wins for her home state, she ultimately voted for a bill she just minutes later decried as rushed and imperfect. It's not a good deal. I don't think I can vote for it. But hey, what can you get me for Alaska? Doesn't this make you appreciate God's government? The way God's family operates, it's not like this. I mean, obviously, the founders set it up. And they created these bodies, these chambers, these branches of government. But as we discussed earlier this week, we played that clip for you yesterday from Charlie Kirk. I mean, John Adams, he quoted John Adams. This is In Character in Crisis, our booklet, our free booklet. Go to the website, thetrumpet.com, to get a free copy of it. But he said our documents, our founding documents, were written for a moral and religious people. This is what happens when you become immoral, when you become anti-God, anti-religion. It's not even to say that religion has the answers. As I say, when you get into the hundreds and hundreds of denominations, the division in religion, it's all over the place. This is Satan's world, obviously. He's the author of division and strife and bitterness and greediness, selfishness, selfish gain, the Get way of life. That's his religion, the way of Get. Where do you see the way of give in any of this? You go from 2.4 to 3.4 trillion in deficit spending, and then you come out patting yourself on the back? These are nation-destroying evils. It's a nation-destroying sickness, and it's spreading. It's spreading. You've got Donald Trump out there in a war of words with Jerome Powell, who's the head of the Fed. This is what President Trump had to say about him. He wants him to bring rates down. This is clip five.
No inflation. Our country's strong. Our interest rate should be 3 points lower. If our interest rate was 3 points lower, that's almost $1 trillion in cost. And it's done just by the signing of a pen, but we have a moron at the head of the Fed. He's a moron.
So there you go. He wants him out. He's got someone else in mind. And you look at what Powell is doing. He obviously is trying to slow down the Trump train. So again, whether it's in the House, the Senate, the Fed, division, so much division. Yes, this president, he is amassing more power, more authority. And he's also exposing a lot of division and strife here at home and around the world as well. And he's also got some pretty big blind spots. And there's a willingness to sit down and talk to anybody. Dialogue is the way. We just got to make a deal. And if you compromise even on your principles in the dark of night, that's no problem. Just get the 50. Get it to 50 and get it on through. And then everyone's going to see there's something for everyone in this big, beautiful bill. There's nothing in it for our future generations, for our young people, for our children. Nothing. It saddles them with a nation-destroying problem that no one is concerned about fixing in D.C. Everyone, just like the morning brief says, everyone can agree. We've got to make some cuts. And then they start arguing. What a system. It says here, this is back to the Politico piece, it says, Murkowski's indecision was a driving force behind the more than 24-hour vote-orama in which votes dragged out for hours to accommodate lobbying and negotiations for her proposed changes to the bill. Talks about what they were doing at 3 a.m. and then 4 a.m. Working right through the night. I mean, that's how serious this is. I mentioned at the top, you know, just the stupidity of the news cycle. And, you know, you have people talking about, yeah, she was walking through the halls draped in a blanket. And then, moving on to the next story, we've got alligator Alcatraz. And whether or not it's a concentration camp or if it's humane or inhumane. Meanwhile, the nation dies. The sickness spreads. It says, amid the overnight drama, as Trump's bill appeared to be headed for failure, Senator Ron Johnson summed up how many of his colleagues privately viewed leadership's decision as coming down between Lisa Murkowski and Rand Paul. Just got to get one of them to swing over. Thune acknowledged in a brief interview that he had flirted with pursuing Paul's vote when it seemed that Murkowski might be slipping away. Holding out clearly paid dividends for Murkowski. Does this sound like God's system? Does this sound like the way of give? Does this sound like it's motivated by a spirit of sacrifice and service for your country? Or is this all about self-centeredness and selfish gain? It says, another goodie, bordered on the obscure, if not for the senator. Bowhead whaling boat captains recognized by the Alaska Eskimo Whaling Commission will be able to deduct more for whale hunting related expenses, up $50,000 from the current $10,000. There you go. There you go. Now, I mean, they said it. There's something for everyone in this bill, even whalers. They're going to get some nice perks and benefits thanks to Murkowski holding out. She held firm. She claimed a great victory for Alaska. Everyone benefits, right? Not our children. Not the United States. Not the foundation underpinning the strength and the power and the future prosperity of the United States of America. Pork barrel spending. That's what it amounts to. And as I say, it makes you all the more love and appreciate God's government. Think about even something as simple as God's system of tithing. You know, a 10%. I guess you could call it a flat tax. A tenth, a tithe. We were talking last night on the drive back from the show, Celtic Throne, just about how property taxes, even in Oklahoma, keep going up and up and up. There's people that own their homes outright, but they can't afford to live in them, particularly on the coast in America, because property taxes are so high. That's just one tax. Forget it. I mean, sales tax, you've got income tax, you've got taxes on everything. You're paying a lot of tax when you fill up your car with gas. Don't get me started on taxes. I want to come back to government, the simplicity, the beauty of God's government, the order, the structure, the principle, the fact that it's based on the law of love. And then finally, when humanity is obeying those laws of love, I mean, you read through, it's not a pretty picture. To read through what they're doing, and this is just with legislation. There have been stories that have just broadcast filth that goes on within the so-called sacred walls of Congress. Unbelievable, heinous sex acts, drunkenness, all kinds of sins. And then you get down to the legislation, and what does this picture tell you? What I just read to you from Politico. It really is thoroughly disgusting. It's embarrassing. We ought to be ashamed of what we're doing to our children. But nobody seems to care. In 2013, my father, he wrote this in the Trumpet. He says, it's only by obeying God, by applying his laws and principles of life, that we can bring real hope and joy into our lives. The laws of God, you see why Paul said in Romans 7 and verse 12 that God's law is holy and just and pure. And this is what we want to throw out the window. And replace it with what? Legislation like what's going through Congress at the moment? No, I think I'd rather have God's law. I think God's law will actually solve the problems of this earth. They will. Once you have the family of God administering the government of God, administering those laws, enforcing those laws, blessings and curses. It's right from the beginning. You heard it from Charlie Kirk yesterday, talking about how often Leviticus and Deuteronomy are referenced in the writings, in the speeches of the founding fathers. Deuteronomy, as Kirk said yesterday, that's like Moses' farewell address. Look, as you go into Canaan, this is what you need to remember. And he reminded them of the Ten Commandments. They're printed in Exodus, but they're also in Deuteronomy. That's because we need a double dose of God's law. Always. And then you get into the New Testament. Never mind what the theologians of today tell you. You get to the New Testament, this young, wealthy man comes up to Christ and says, what do I need to do to make it into the kingdom of God? And Christ said, keep the commandments. Observe the commandments of God. And read right through the rest of the New Testament. Read it for yourself, because if you get people interpreting it for you, they're going to say, oh, yeah, Jesus came to do everything for you. You don't need to do anything. That old law, that's so old covenant. We've got love now. Do you think there was much love going on in Congress this week? I mean, a sincere, outgoing concern for the good and welfare of others, like our children, like our future generations in America? You see the spirit of greed and selfishness. You see vanity and strife on display. It's always, always there, no matter how you view it, as I say. It says here in Isaiah 59, well, let me just finish the quote. We do need real change to solve our problems. This is my father writing in 2013. And even though we will go through some dark times, God will bring that to pass. He's about to effect a revolution by sending his son, Jesus Christ, to rule this earth as King of Kings and Lord of Lords. We need that. We need to pray for God to hasten that event, to bring it on sooner rather than later. God, Jesus told us to pray when we start our prayers, pray thy kingdom come. Now, there's a lot of religious people that believe that God's kingdom is just some ethereal nothing that's inside of your heart. Well, the kingdom of God in embryo is the church. It does start with God's family, his church today. And there can't possibly be a church that's split off into, you know, 500 different denominations, sects, and so on. It's one church headed up by the Lord Jesus Christ. You read about the church eras, the seven different church eras. They're in Revelation 2 and 3, and you see Christ right in the midst of them. Christ is the head of the church, 1 Corinthians 12, Ephesians 4. And then he places us, the members, in the body where it pleases him. That's 1 Corinthians 12 and verse 18. We are the body of Christ. We live the way Christ lives. We endeavor to follow in his steps. As Peter said, 1 Peter 2:21, I think it is. Isaiah 59 talks about just how man is groping in the dark. We grope for the wall like the blind. I mean, we're up all night. We're trying to pass 964 pages of trillions and trillions of spending that we don't even have in the bank. We're just putting it on the tab, and it's never ending. Verse 20, it says, you can read the rest of Isaiah 59 on your own time, and you see what's wrong with our world. You see what's wrong with our nations. Verse 20, it says, and the Redeemer shall come to Zion, and unto them that turn from transgression in Jacob, saith the Lord, the Redeemer is coming. For those that turn from sin, that turn from transgression, that stop living the way of Get. And it's going to be brought on by just some humbling and sobering prophecies surrounding the Great Tribulation. That's what it takes for God to finally get our attention. As I say, the wake-up call that's coming, I mean, it's going to be brutal. But look at the way man's behaving now. We need it. We obviously need that rod of correction talked about in Isaiah 10. It's the only way God can get our attention. It's the only way God can get our hearts to soften so that we look to him, so that we look to his perfect, holy, just, and righteous law and start building our lives around him, around his family. You know, everyone almost that gives feedback to Celtic Throne talks about family. I had a lady last night. They were an Indian family living here in the UK. And she was just saying, you know, thanks so much for this family theme. Thank you. I mean, it's important to us. And it's rare today, she noted. She talked about her family dinners and her children, and she's got one that's off in the States now on a soccer scholarship, and how important it is to get together for dinners and to talk and to have a strong, robust dialogue, a relationship that's solid. And she, you know, she was talking to my son for a while, who performs in the show, and then she came over to me after my son said, "That's my father over there." And she thanked me. She thanked me for my family. I mean, that's, you don't hear that kind of thing very often today. They know. People know, even coming from shattered families in many cases. They come to Celtic Throne and they know there's something that's important there. They know there's something that's dying in the rest of society because it's not there. God is a family. His plan is a family plan. He establishes it in the very first chapter of the Holy Bible. When he says, okay, I've made all of these different animals. Now I'm going to reproduce myself. Could that really be possible? Genesis 1 and verse 26. What does it mean to reproduce yourself in the form of a son or a daughter? You marry, you and your spouse, you produce. You reproduce. And a lot of times it's like a chip off the old block. If the family stays intact, that child begins to take on even the mannerisms of the parents. But certainly the teaching, the ideology, the background, the tradition, so much of it, it just passes on down to the next generation. If the parents are doing their job, it's a weighty responsibility for sure. But now think about the leaders of our society. I mean, in that sense, I mean, they're literal parents, most of them, I assume. But they're also like, they're parents of the oncoming generations of Americans. And look at what they're passing on to the next generation. It's just simply the spirit of get. Every man for himself. Just do what seems right in your own eyes. Don't judge anyone. Don't really use authority. And when you talk about laws, talk about these big, beautiful bills that we stayed up all night to pass through Congress. That, as I say, it really is a pretty disgusting and vile look at just how everything operates inside those so-called sacred walls. Isaiah 60 and verse 1, it says, "Arise, shine, for your light has come, and the glory of the Lord is risen upon you." See, the immediate future for our people, it's not a pretty picture. It's pretty dark. And we're, like the previous chapter says, we're groping in the dark, searching, trying to find a way out of a mess, a way out of chaos, a way out of confusion, a way out of suffering and misery. The sun is about to shine, spiritually speaking. Verse 2 says, "For behold, the darkness shall cover the earth, and gross darkness the people, but the Lord shall arise upon you, and his glory shall be seen upon you." This is talking about the wonderful world tomorrow, when we're going to be born into God's family, when we'll be a family radiating happiness, light, spirituality, strength, peace. The light of the world. That's what God's family will be in the world tomorrow. And verse 3 says, "And the Gentiles shall come to your light, and kings to the brightness of your rising." Nations, you can see more on this in Zechariah 14. Maybe I can cover that tomorrow or the next day in Jerusalem. But you can see all nations flowing in and out of Jerusalem, coming to the light, receiving the light of the gospel message, receiving the truth of God, and learning about all of God's holy and righteous and pure and just laws. I want to save some time for more feedback, since I just talked about it there, from Darby. This is about 60 miles up the road from Edstone. We performed last night, Celtic Throne did, in front of about 500 people. We're finishing tomorrow in London. There's already 1,000, I think, that are coming to that one at the Apollo. You can go to CelticThrone.com to learn about how to get tickets for the final show of this tour. So we'll conclude today's show with feedback from the show in Derby last night. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you next time.
It was absolutely fabulous. It was wonderful. It was joyous. It was wonderful.
Yeah.
Everybody just looked like a happy family. It was fantastic. Everybody was up dancing, enjoying it. Fabulous, yeah.
It's a wonderful night. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Feedback on the show?
What did it was you fantastic. It was absolutely fantastic. We really
It was really good. I really liked the dancing.
Are you guys dancers at all?
No, but I really want to practice it now. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Jack, what did you think of the show?
Fantastic show.
Really amazing, honestly.
Yeah, I've never seen it my whole entire life.
This is probably about 20, 30 years ago. We actually watched Michael Flatley. And to see this and the young generation sort of almost like, almost like to the same caliber as he is. And that's a compliment. Do you know what I mean? They were absolutely amazing. See the 7-year-old younger child to all the way to the oldest, they were absolutely amazing. That we were from the start to finish, like being Indians. I'm not saying this right, but this is like we were just reminiscing. Indians is all about family. It's all about, you know, enjoying yourself, and it's all about dancing and singing. This is our vibe, man. It was like amazing.
I think there's
something about Irish and Indian. There's something associated with this. I'm telling you that anybody that comes to see the show is going to be actually mesmerized and actually enjoying it too. Like from the start to finish, it was like a really good sort of vibe. That's all I can say.
We get your guys' feedback for the show?
An ex-Irish dancer here to have a chat with you.
I've seen the River Dance and the Lord of the Dance, and they were amazing. But this blew me away. It was absolutely amazing. I'd watch it again now.
Yeah, and this is an Irish dancer. And this one.
Many years ago we were Irish dancers, not now. We're all ages now.
They know better than anyone.
Ah, best. Absolutely amazing. I could sit there again now and watch it all over again.
They've come from Birmingham. I was in Birmingham. I've come here again, second go. I brought them with me today.
Thanks so much.
Next time you come, you'll see us on the front row with all the families.
Yeah.
Nice.
Back. What do you all think of the show?
Back, Jonathan.
Oh, my gosh.
Fantastic.
Phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. An amazing evening. Yeah. Yeah, thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah, the talent, really. The practice, how they must have practiced.
Energy.
Energy. I'm worn out just looking at them. They were brilliant.
Yeah. You know, smile on our faces.
Yeah. And it looked as if they were enjoying it themselves. I think it came through, you know, they were smiling all the time. And a real credit to all the young people.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Definitely.
Thank you. Absolutely amazing. I could sit through it all over again. My sister brings tears to my eyes.
It was absolutely excellent. And the most disappointing thing to see from a Derby person here is it isn't full.
Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic this evening. I was just saying, we've seen Riverdance, but I do believe that this tonight, with the story as well, of the history, made it more better. It, not just the dancing, but the whole set. And the design at the back, how they did it, brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
What do you think of the show?
Superb. Absolutely superb. I hope it goes worldwide. Take yourself off to Ireland next. But brilliant show. Excellent. Everyone was brilliant. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant.
It was really good. I liked all like the fighting parts, and the singing was really good as well.
It was amazing. The choreography, the dancers, the kicks, how they get their legs so high, I never know. But it was amazing. It was such a fantastic show. It was really, really worth the watch. So thank you. Fantastic, guys.
Fantastic. I yelled my lungs out. This is my third or fourth one of this tour. I've got one more in London. I can't believe how great these kids are.
It was wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. It gives you so much pleasure to see something like this. I hope you all get as much pleasure out of doing the show as we get watching it. And yes, it's just amazing. Just amazing. And thank you all so much.